Radio Borders Youth Association. Hello, everybody. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today's the 9th of November. We will continue listen to Master Tenzin Chosen's program with the book Mind Trainings Like the Rays of Sun by Lam Kapel. And please enjoy.
Hello and welcome to the program today. It's been a long time since we last met, but I hope you have found some benefit from the teachings that have been broadcast while I was away. Although I was on pilgrimage in Sri Lanka and India for just over 3 months, we continued the alternate broadcasts until now to complete the series before I took over again. Now I'm back, and it may seem a bit nuts, but we're going back to the text we started before I went on pilgrimage, Mind Training Like the Rays of the Sun by Lam Kapel. I hope you haven't completely forgotten what we spoke about in the months leading up to my disappearance, but perhaps for many listeners, the memories will be vague. Therefore, let's go through a kind of summary, just to bring us up to speed with the text. But before doing that, let's turn our minds to our motivation, as we usually do. Mind Training Like the Rays of the Sun is a text about developing bodhicitta, the wish to attain enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. And that also happens to be the best kind of motivation we can possibly have. Because bodhicitta focuses on both enlightenment and the wish to help all others, it is regarded, at least in the Mahayana traditions, as the most effective and beneficial motivation we can operate out of. We can, of course, have other motivations, like happiness in this life, or good fortune in coming lives, or even liberation from all suffering for oneself. The first of these, happiness in this life, is not regarded as a Buddhist motivation, because once this life ends, any benefit from such a motivation also ends. If you think about it, all beings have this motivation. It's very common and not something very unique or special. Buddhists would rather this life go not so well, or even badly, if it means coming lives are much better. So we don't really set much store by such a limited motivation. The least motivation for a Buddhist is the happiness and well-being of coming lives. For instance, we do something like listening to a radio program so that we can once again attain a human rebirth to be able to practice the Dharma. That is a Buddhist motivation, but not a very extensive one. Why? Because once the life informed by that motivation is over, so is the benefit of the karma from our action. The motivation was only strong enough to allow the positive karma to last to the end of the life it ripened in. Then, no more karmic benefit can come from that action. However, can you see that the decision to attain liberation from oneself gives a much more powerful motivation? It means at least one more person will become enlightened, and whatever he or she passes on in their lives, even their presence, will be hugely beneficial to others. So this is a very good motivation. But the best of all is bodhicitta, the wish to gain enlightenment not only for our own benefit, but so that we can be both temporary and ultimate benefit to others. That means working not only for their temporal benefit, like helping with material things and giving advice and so on, but also doing what we can to lead them to their own enlightenment. Because this wish is for all beings, not excluding a single one, it makes a very vast motivation, and consequently, we can accumulate a very vast positive potential. So when we consider our motivation for listening to programs like this, it is best to have a bodhicitta motivation. However, your mind might balk at such a huge undertaking. When we say all beings, we mean all the people, all the animals, all the reptiles, insects, birds and fish, as well as all the beings that we can't see with our limited senses. Even thinking about all the beings just on this earth, the mind boggles. Never mind all the beings that might be out there in the universe and in other universes as well. The number of beings is beyond infinity. So you might think, I can't do this, it's impossible. Then it's okay to make a lesser motivation, such as participating so that you yourself become enlightened. If you are wise, you will not go any lower than that. Surely we can do better than just motivating for benefit in coming lives. So now I've talked enough about motivation. Let's take a minute to think about our motivation and to transform it into something worthwhile if we see some serious limitation. Thank you. Now to return to mind training like the rays of the sun. Basically, this is a commentary on a text called The 7 Points of Mind Training. Though, as I pointed out at the beginning of this series of programs, when I read the 7 Points text on air, this doesn't mean 7 simple points, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. For clarity's sake, let's read through the 7 points of mind training again to remind us of what we're discussing, and also as a pointer to where we've arrived in our consideration of Namkha Pal's commentary. It goes like this. Homage to great compassion. The essence of this nectar of secret instruction is transmitted from the master of Sumatra, Sir Lingpa. You should understand the significance of this instruction as like a diamond, the sun, and a medicinal tree. This time of the 5D generations will then be transformed into the path to the fully awakened state. First, train in the preliminaries. Banish the one to blame for everything. Meditate on the great kindness of all beings. Practice a combination of giving and taking. Giving and taking should be practiced alternately, and you should begin by taking from yourself. These two should be made to ride on the breath. Concerning the 3 objects, 3 poisons, and 3 virtues, the instruction to be followed, in brief, is to take these words to heart in all activities. When the environment and its inhabitants overflow with unwholesomeness, transform adverse conditions into the path to enlightenment. Apply meditation immediately at every opportunity. The supreme method is accompanied by the 4 practices. Train in the 5 powers. The 5 powers themselves are the great vehicle's precept on the transference of consciousness. Cultivate these paths of practice. Integrate all the teachings into 1 thought. Primary importance should be given to the 2 witnesses. Constantly cultivate only a peaceful mind. The measure of a trained mind is that it has turned away. There are 5 great marks of a trained mind. The trained mind retains control even when distracted. Always train in the 3 general points. Engage vigorously in forceful cultivation and abandonment. Subjugate all the reasons for selfishness. Train consistently to deal with difficult situations. Don't rely on other conditions. Transform your attitude, but maintain your natural behavior. Don't speak of others' incomplete qualities. Don't concern yourself with others' business. Give up hope of every reward. Avoid poisonous food. Don't maintain inverted loyalty. Don't make malicious banter. Don't wait in ambush. Don't strike at the vital point. Don't place the load of a horse on a pony. Don't sprint to win the race. Don't turn gods into devils. Don't seek others' misery as a means to happiness. Every yoga should be performed as 1. There are 2 activities at both beginning and end. Train first in the easiest practices. Whichever occurs, be patient with both. Guard both at the cost of your life. Train in the 3 difficulties. Transform everything into the great vehicle path. Value an encompassing and far-reaching practice. Seek for the 3 principal causes. Purify the coarser ones first. Practice that which is more effective. Don't let the 3 factors weaken. Never be parted from the 3 possessions. If you relapse, meditate on it as the antidote. Engage in the principal practices right now. In future, always put on armor. Don't apply a wrong understanding. Don't be sporadic. Practice unflinchingly. Release investigation and analysis. Don't be boastful. Don't be short-tempered. Don't make a short-lived attempt. Don't expect gratitude. When stability has been attained, impart the secret teaching. Consider all phenomena as like dreams. Examine the nature of unborn awareness. The remedy itself is released in its own place. Place the essence of the path on the nature of the basis of all. In between meditation sessions, be like a conjurer. Or, in the period between sessions, be a creator of illusions. That's the 7 points mind training text. Now, you might remember that although the 7 points pays homage to compassion, the homage in Namkar Pel's commentary on it is to the spiritual masters. He writes, "At all times I take refuge in and prostrate at the feet of the sublime and infinitely compassionate spiritual masters. Out of their immense love, may they care for me in every moment of my life." This indicates that mind training, like the rays of the sun, is going to follow the Lam Rim, the graduated path to enlightenment. Now, the first topic in the Lam Rim is the importance of the spiritual mentor and how to devote to him or her. So it's easy to catch Namkar Pel's intent. It's an important feature of the mind training like the rays of the sun that the development of bodhicitta is linked to the graduated path teachings. Another unusual feature of this text, you may remember, is the inclusion of the instructions on how to take adversity into the path to enlightenment. Jeremy Ruffsell, in his preface to the translation we are using, writes, "Even though we may have transformed our motivation and outlook in positive ways so that we actually want to help others, through seeing the disadvantages of selfishness and so on, we are continually beset by obstacles and difficulties which prevent our putting our good intentions into practice. So not only do these instructions help us open out towards other beings, but they also help us transform whatever difficulties come our way into something valuable. In addition, the mind training teachings help us to recognize that our real enemy is our own disturbing emotions. As well as identifying our disturbing emotions, the teachings provide us with ways of opposing them directly." Namkar Pel's text then goes on, "Arising from the source of love and compassion, the ship of the awakening mind is well launched. Above it, below the great sails of the six perfections and the four ways of amassing disciples, which are driven by the wind of enthusiastic effort that never slackens. Perfectly, it carries embodied beings across the ocean of cyclic existence, landing them on the wish-fulfilling jewel island of omniscience. I prostrate, placing my head at the feet of the leaders of the spiritual lineage, the subduer, who is our supreme navigator, the powerful Buddha Shakyamuni, Maitreya and his spiritual followers, Asanga, Vasubandhu, and Vijayakokila, Manjushri and his followers, Nagarjuna, and the supreme wise saint Shantideva, the ruler of the Golden Isle of Sumatra, and his disciple, the noble Atisha, and his Tibetan disciple, Drontumba, and his three spiritual brothers, Potowa, Pungchungwa, and Changawa. I prostrate at the feet of the great emanation of Manjushri, Tsongkhapa, the second conqueror of these degenerate times, who propounded the individual spiritual paths of these great pioneers with extreme lucidity and coherence. Supreme among all his wonderful teachings are the means for activating the awakening mind. I shall expound his perfect teachings with absolute accuracy. Those fortunate to follow the way of the great vehicle should pay close attention for true appreciation." Now, this indicates that the text is about generating the awakening mind, or bodhicitta, the wish to attain enlightenment so one can be of greatest benefit to all beings everywhere. Fully generating this mind is not an easy task by any means, and traditionally, one starts by first developing great love and great compassion. The word "great" before love and compassion means that the object of the love and compassion is all beings. Usually our love and compassion are saved for those close to us, our family, partner, and so on. But as you can see, that love and compassion is based on a biased view. It only focuses on a select few, and often the bias relies on getting something in return from those we have such feelings for. They must love us in return or do things for us, or we get angry and upset. Great love and compassion go way beyond that. It is love and compassion for all beings everywhere and demands nothing in return for oneself. This is the basis we have to start on if we want to develop the awakening mind. Then, having this mind as our motivation, we engage in what is known as the Bodhisattva's deeds, which Namkar Pel describes as the six perfections and four ways of amassing disciples. The six perfections are, of course, generosity, morality, patience, enthusiasm, concentration, and wisdom. And briefly, the four ways of amassing disciples: being generous with material resources, teaching the Dharma in a pleasing voice, encouraging students according to their capacities and needs, and acting and behaving according to what we teach. As Namkar Pal says, these practices become our main activity, which we have to pursue with an enthusiastic effort that never slackens. Then we will eventually, after a long, long time, reach the state of omniscience or Buddhahood. Naturally, along the way, we come across all sorts of difficulties and challenges. And nobody ever said the spiritual path is easy. So we have to find methods to deal with the difficulties so that they become advantages for ourselves rather than hindrances. We want to use these difficulties, no matter how serious they are, to progress along our spiritual progress. This is what is meant by bringing adversities into the path, and in this way we can make both the easy times and the hard times work for us. In other words, there is never a time that we are not forging our way forward on our spiritual journey. As Namkar Pal himself writes, if we enter the gateway of this practice, we will be able to transform unfavorable circumstances into favorable circumstances. And this is the action of a wise man. This teaching provides the power to defeat all adversaries and overcome all obstacles on the path. If we travel in this way, the way of development and meditation, we can see our bodies as a blissful Pure Land. Then unfavorable circumstances, whether internal or external, will neither cause misery nor upset the mind. This is called the city of the source of happiness and is the point of attaining the single-pointed meditation capable of easily following all the doctrines. A little practice at this time when the 5D generations arise and we are overwhelmed by both internal and external impediments will be more swiftly effective than accumulating merits for eons in a Pure Land. Such is the special method for transforming bad times into good ones, an explanation of which follows. He goes on to list some of the great expounders of these teachings, starting with the Buddha himself, as we've just read. And then after that, he gives a short introduction to the history of the lineage of the teachings and says something about their special qualities, comparing them to a diamond, the sun, and a medicinal plant. As even a bit of a diamond can eliminate all one's poverty, so can these teachings bring richness of understanding and wisdom. Just as the sun eliminates darkness, so these teachings can overpower the darkness of ignorance. And just as a medicinal plant cures a multitude of diseases, so can these teachings free us from all the afflictions that bring so much suffering. Now, I'm not going into the history of these teachings again, as we've already covered it in a much earlier program. Namkar Pal then comes to the actual practice, starting with the instruction, first train in the preliminaries. These include meditating on the preciousness and rarity of this human life, impermanence and the inevitability of death and the great uncertainty around when it will come for us, and also how only the Dharma will be of help at the time of death. The preliminaries also include understanding karma, that is, how our actions will shape our future. Namkar Pal goes into the four qualities of karma. It is definite, meaning positive actions must bring happiness and negative actions will always bring suffering. It multiplies. We will not experience the consequences of actions we have not done, but actions we have done will always lead to consequences, which may come sooner or later. Maybe in this life, maybe in the next, or maybe in a life 100,000 eons after this one. In other words, we can't escape our karma unless we actively do something to purify it. It will definitely catch up with us in due course. Namkar Pal then completes consideration of the preliminary practices with various quotes on the drawbacks of cyclic existence, using as a basis the six sufferings. Now that is, the suffering arising from the basic uncertainty of everything, the suffering arising from a continual sense of dissatisfaction, the suffering arising from dying over and over again, and of having to be born again and again, and the suffering that comes from never being sure of our status. When high, we will inevitably fall. When low, we will at some stage have to rise up. We're like a yo-yo, sometimes going up, sometimes down, always uncertain, never at rest. And finally, he talks about the suffering of the inherent loneliness of our samsaric journey. We are alone at birth, and alone through death, and essentially all our experience in between is always ours alone. Nobody can truly share it with us. Now that finishes the preliminary considerations, and he then goes on to discuss the awakening mind in two aspects, the conventional and the ultimate. The conventional awakening mind is, of course, bodhicitta, the wish to attain enlightenment for the sake of all beings. And the ultimate awakening mind is the realization of emptiness, the atom bomb against all mental obscurations. In most other mind training texts, the development of the ultimate awakening mind is discussed before bodhicitta. But as Namkarpal is following the graduated path structure, he discusses conventional bodhicitta first. He points out that conventional bodhicitta is the criteria by which we can claim to be a practitioner of the Mahayana, and then goes on to give various quotes showing the advantages of developing this mind. Here is one from the array of Tree Trunk Sutra that will give you some idea. "O child of my family, the awakening mind is like the seed of all the Buddha's teachings. It is like the field in which the positive actions of all wandering beings prosper. It is like the earth on which the whole world depends. It is like the son of the Lord of Wealth, who completely eliminates all kinds of poverty. It is like the father, completely protecting all bodhisattvas. It is like the king of wish-granting jewels, which perfectly fulfills every purpose. It is like the miraculous vase, which acts to accomplish every wish. It is like a spear vanquishing the foe of disturbing emotions. It is like armor guarding you from improper thoughts. It is like a sword beheading the disturbing emotions. It is like an axe felling the tree of disturbing emotions. It's like a weapon staving off all kinds of attack. It is like the hook which draws you out of the waters of cyclic existence. It is like the whirlwind that scatters all mental obstructions in their sources. It is like the condensed teaching that encompasses all the prayers and activities of the bodhisattvas. It is like a shrine before which all the gods, demigods, and humans of the world can present their offerings. O child of my family, the awakening mind is endowed like this with these and with immeasurable other qualities. The moment it, that is bodhicitta, is born in your mind stream," he writes, "all obscurations of previously accumulated actions are burnt up. It acts to protect you from all miseries and fears. It begins to provide you with the inexhaustible fruits of higher states of rebirth and the definite goodness of liberation. It is like the quintessential butter arising from the churning of the ocean of scriptures. It is like the seed that is the exclusive proximate cause leading you to the fully awakened state of being." And then he goes on to write, "In realizing such benefits of the awakening mind, your heartstrings should resound with joy," saying that the realization of bodhicitta on your mind stream is an event of major importance. He then goes on to explain the techniques of developing conventional bodhicitta and keeping the precepts associated with it. The Tibetan tradition teaches two methods to awaken bodhicitta in our minds, the six cause and one effect method, and exchanging self for others. Namkarpal lists both methods. He writes, "Having realized that relatives arouse feeling of pleasure, enemies arouse feelings of unease, and those who are neither give rise to feelings of indifference, meditate on all sentient beings as being close to you. Although in reality all sentient beings are not your mother, by meditating on recognizing them as your mother, remembering their kindness and wishing to repay it, generate a sense of their being attractive." Now that's the summary of the six cause and one effect method. The six causes being recognizing all beings as one's mother, remembering their kindness, wishing to repay that kindness, developing great love, developing great compassion, and taking on the responsibility to liberate them from all suffering. This leads to the one effect, the generation of bodhicitta. Namkarpal then goes on to mention the method of exchanging self for others, as described in Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. He writes, "Once we have grasped the many disadvantages of the self-centered attitude, we will be inclined to give it up. And realizing the many benefits of appreciating others, we will generate a sense of sentient beings who are the object of our concern as being attractive, pleasing, and dear to us. He then goes on into some detail on the second method, starting with considering what should be given up, seeing the disadvantages of the self-centered mind. In terms of the 7 points of mind training text that I read earlier in the program, this section starts where the 7 points says, banish the one to blame for everything. Namkar Pal explains it like this. We sentient beings run after misery that we do not desire and never achieve what we wish. At the root of it all is we seek to lay the blame elsewhere, which is a mistake. This is because of all the various lengthy and violent sufferings that come from being born among the 5 or 6 kinds of existence. From the hell without respite to the peak of existence, they are not without causes, nor do they arise from unrelated causes. These come about in dependence upon the actions and disturbing emotions that give rise to everything. Since actions are caused by disturbing emotions are the primary factor. Moreover, amongst the disturbing emotions, it is the ignorance that clutches onto a misconception of self that is the principal source of all misery. So here, the one to blame for everything is this misconception of the self, for it is on the basis of this that we develop our attachments, aversions, and indifference, and all the other disturbing emotions that impel us into action. Namkar Pal quotes a verse from Shantideva's A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life that goes like this. However much torment, fear, and suffering there is in the world, it all arises from the misconception of self. Oh, what great trouble this great ghost brings me. And then he says that as this misconception leads to disturbing emotions, which are actually the harm bringers, we should see such a misconception as our actual adversary and have nothing to do with it. Again, Shantideva writes, thus through long unbroken contact, he is our foe, sole cause of an ever-increasing heap of trouble. When we are certain of this in our hearts, how can we be happy and unafraid in cyclic existence? So, there is something we can contemplate for the next week, for we've now run out of time. We will elaborate further next time, but until then, keep a calm mind and happy heart. Please dedicate any positive potential from our discussion today to gaining enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. Thank you, and goodbye.